Here to dive into industry trends with leading ETF experts, this is ETF Spotlight with Nina Mishra.
Hello and welcome to ETF Spotlight. I'm your host, Nina Mishra. In this episode, we talk about Bitcoin and blockchain ETFs. Bitcoin has more than doubled this year and is up more than 800% over the past year. And cryptocurrencies surged to new record highs today, Wednesday the 14th, before Coinbase's public listing, which propelled further interest in cryptocurrencies. We don't have a Bitcoin ETF yet in this US, though more than eight providers have filed for Bitcoin ETFs this year itself. But there's a lot of investor interest in blockchain ETFs, and one of them by Amplify has done very well. It is one of the best performing ETFs this year with a gain of over 60%. In the first part of this episode, my guest is Michael Sonnenschein, Managing Director at Grayscale Investments, the world's largest digital currency asset manager. Grayscale offers several cryptocurrency investment products, including the ultra-popular Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, ticker symbol GBTC, which has about $40 billion in assets under management. It has been very popular with investors because it is one of the very few Bitcoin investments that retail investors can access in their retirement or brokerage accounts because there is no Bitcoin ETF yet. In the second part, I'll be joined by Mike Venito, who manages the Amplify blockchain ETF, which, as I mentioned, is one of the best performing ETFs of 2020. I hope you'll enjoy this episode. Joining me now is Michael Sonnenschein. Michael, welcome back. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
So we had you on the podcast in September last year, and Bitcoin was trading around $11,000 then, and Grayscale had about $5.7 billion in assets under management. And here we are. Bitcoin is trading close to $64,000, and Grayscale now has about $50 billion in assets under management. Excellent. So tell us why Bitcoin price has exploded and where does it go from here?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really important to talk a little bit about, call it the last, 12 to 16 months. And it's been an explosive time for the digital currency ecosystem and certainly Bitcoin specifically. If we think back to early 2020, when COVID kind of brought the global economy to a grinding halt in March of 2020, we saw some real deleveraging in the market that caused Bitcoin, and not just Bitcoin, really every asset class out there, including digital currencies, sold off precipitously. And over the course of 2020, we saw Bitcoin rebound, as did the entire digital currency asset class, in a way that really created for many investors some real staying power, and the resilience that they demonstrated actually caused them to go on to be one of, if not the highest returning assets of the year. And over the course of 2020, we saw for the first time some really meaningful participation from some very notable, very well-followed, very seasoned investors, folks like Paul Tudor Jones and Stanley Druckenmiller and Bill Miller and others coming out very publicly in support of Bitcoin and or stating that they had gotten involved in Bitcoin directly. And we'd never really seen that level of public, support and validation. We also started seeing a lot of corporates begin to allocate to Bitcoin on their balance sheet, which also was a new phenomenon. Things like the emergence of seeing Bitcoin on balance sheets of companies like Square and MicroStrategy became really important and gave a level of air cover that I think investors hadn't seen before. But more importantly, I think that investors over the course of 2020, which is certainly carried into 2021, have really been having to navigate what is certainly a differentiated investment universe. And one of the biggest elements to that is the fact that policymakers really had to figure out ways to combat the digital currency ecosystem and figure out a way to kind of kickstart the economy in a way that could benefit the digital currency ecosystem and the economy as a whole. And to do that, they really implemented financial stimulus, fiscal stimulus that would be injected into the U.S. economy. And as a result of that, there was this strong turn in the investment community towards digital currencies because they have verifiable scarcity. They were believed to be an area where investors could go to shore up their investment portfolios as they saw a dilution in the fiat currency world. And that seems to have had a really material effect on many investors who, regardless of their interest or their really conviction in Bitcoin, now believe that there is a reason to own assets with verifiable scarcity like Bitcoin.
Very interesting. And I was also interested in your thoughts on Coinbase listing, because Coinbase made its public debut today, and it was through a direct listing, and the crypto exchange now has a valuation exceeding $80 billion. So tell us what Coinbase listing means for cryptocurrencies.
Well, it's an amazing milestone, but I'd also say it's just the beginning. I mean, certainly Grayscale, you know, being one of Coinbase's largest customers, is super excited and super happy for Brian and the team on making this listing happening. And we really think that it's, you know, going to unlock a longer term opportunity for more and more people to participate in the crypto economy. Certainly, this successful listing, I think, signals to the market a certain level of probably maturity and just really how far the digital currency ecosystem has come. I think many in the investment universe are going to look now for what is going to be that next Coinbase and likely inspire a new wave of investment from VCs that will certainly bring kind of a lift to the entire ecosystem as a whole, which is exciting. And I also think that the Coinbase listing presents for the first time for many investors the ability to actually invest in the industry as opposed to only having the ability to invest directly in cryptocurrencies. So from our view, this is very, very exciting and probably will inspire a whole group of kind of blue chip, if you will, crypto companies to kind of bring their companies to the public markets.
Definitely a very exciting time for crypto investors. Now, I wanted to talk about GBTC's discount. So when we talked in September, GBTC was trading at a premium to its NAV. And that had been the trend for the past many years. In fact, at the end of 2020, it was trading at a massive premium to its NAV. And now lately, GBTC has been trading at a discount to its NAV. And, investors know that GBTC does not have the creation and redemption mechanism that helps an ETF to keep its trading price very close to NAV or the intrinsic value of their holdings. So talk to us a little bit about what investors need to know about GBTC's discount, and should they be concerned about that?
Well, the price at which GBTC trades in the public market has always been, and for the foreseeable future, will be subject to market forces. GBTC is the ticker symbol for the public trading shares of Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. So this is the world's largest Bitcoin investment vehicle. It owns over 3.5% of the outstanding Bitcoin supply and is the largest and certainly most liquid Bitcoin investment instrument out there. As you mentioned, historically, it did trade at a premium to its net asset value. More recently, it has begun trading at a little bit of a discount to its net asset value. And this is something that is, you know, quite often seen for investment products like this that do trade, you know, above or below their net asset value. Ultimately, I think that there has been still more than ever great receptivity around GBTC because it is an access product, because it is, gives investors the ability to get exposure to Bitcoin in the form of a security. And for many investors, this is kind of one of the only ways they may feel comfortable getting that exposure. Ultimately, we did share with the market as a reminder that we are committed to converting GBTC into an ETF. We think that that's a very important milestone in the life cycle of this product. This is a product that went from just a private placement to then being a publicly traded instrument to now it's not only a publicly traded instrument, but it also is the first SEC reporting company that is a digital currency instrument. And so we believe that its conversion to an ETF is kind of the next milestone in the journey of this product. And so ultimately in an ETF format, we would expect that market participants would be arbitraging away premiums and discounts in an effort to keep the product in line with its underlying net asset value.
So since you mentioned GBTC's conversion plans, let's talk a little bit more about that. So if GBTC converts, it would be one of the largest ETFs because it has already has more than $40 billion in assets under management. It could be the second largest commodity ETF next to GLD, or you never know, it could GBTC's assets could exceed GLD in the coming weeks. So tell us what that means for other Bitcoin ETF filings. We have at least 8 now. And also, what kind of expense ratio investors can expect on GBTC ETF if the conversion is approved by the SEC?
Well, I think it's like we've long shared this belief that a Bitcoin ETF here in the U.S. is a matter of when, not a matter of if. I think regulators have certainly been pretty clear with market participants that they're looking for a certain level of maturity in the Bitcoin market before they're going to be comfortable approving ETFs. And so similar to what we've started to see in other jurisdictions, I do think that there will be several ETFs here in the US over time. Unfortunately, what we've seen in other asset classes outside of Bitcoin is unfortunately a race to the bottom on fees. And so there will be fee compression. And we at Grayscale certainly acknowledge that our fee will come down in the ETF format, but similar to the way that we've seen this in other ETF realms, I'm sure there will be multiple product offerings and, you know, one potential point of differentiation between them will, of course, be fees.
Excellent. Now, Bitcoin gets a lot of attention because it is the largest cryptocurrency by market cap. And then probably Ethereum and Litecoin also get some investor attention. But there are several thousand cryptocurrencies available to investors. And you also offer some other cryptocurrency investment trusts to investors. And in fact, last month itself, Grayscale launched 5 new digital currency investment trusts. So I was interested in your thoughts on whether Bitcoin-focused investors should look at other cryptocurrencies too, and also how do you decide which coin trust to offer to investors?
So I would say it's a very involved and complicated process. You know, we are looking at kind of where we identify opportunities to bring to our investors based on, you know, projects and tokens that may be solving real world use cases or creating certain types of solutions combined with and kind of marrying with, I guess, where investors are telling us they're interested in exploring or having allocations to certain digital assets. And so we look at everything from the origin of a token, how did it come to market, what kind of supply constraints are there or aren't there on it, what is the integrity of the underlying blockchain associated with the token? We look at where price discovery happens. Are there sound custodial solutions, et cetera? And so it's a fun and exciting role to have at Grayscale, where, you know, we as a team probably at any one time think of, you know, probably 20, 30 different product ideas and have to keep many of them on the shelf until kind of we think investors are ready for them. But certainly I would say, given how much demand there's been for the now 14 different products we have at Grayscale, I would say that investors certainly look at this as a bona fide asset class, that it is not just Bitcoin, and there are other areas of the market that they want exposure to, whether it's focusing on things like privacy, things like gaming, things like file storage, or even just other protocols like Ethereum. These are important considerations for investors, and I certainly think that they believe there is, you know, good merit to having not only diversification within their portfolios by having crypto exposure, but also cryptocurrency exposure that is diversified itself.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, Bitcoin has had this absolutely mind-boggling rally over the past few months, and some market experts caution that Bitcoin is a bubble now. So what would you tell investors who want to invest in Bitcoin, who are convinced about its potential, but if they are worried about buying at these levels?
Well, I would certainly say, like we always have, you know, never invest more in digital currencies than you can afford to lose. Despite the growth and the traction that it's received and the receptivity that it has had in the investment community, both by newcomers and incumbent financial institutions, it is still something that I think most investors have and should maybe consider thinking of as being more akin to an early stage technology investment. And so we often tell people to kind of think about what the appropriate allocation should be based on their risk tolerance and their time horizon. And that also means that crypto is not necessarily going to be an investment that is the right kind of investment for every investor out there. And so investors should, you know, potentially think about legging into those positions over time in an effort to kind of average, you know, cost into a position that makes them feel comfortable.
That's very helpful. Now, I believe that Grayscale recently conducted a financial advisor survey about investing in cryptocurrencies. Could you talk a little bit about key takeaways from that survey?
This is a fun study that we try and do every year. We really try to examine how investor attitudes are changing over time as the crypto ecosystem is changing over time. And so we think about everything from education to awareness to dispelling preconceived notions or myths. And it's very clear that one of the biggest elements that investors need is one of the things I mentioned, education. We believe that with greater education, investors have shared that, you know, they'd be more likely to invest in digital currencies, and that whether they're making their own investing decisions or they work with a financial advisor or another representative, that having the ability to have a better library of information available to them to make informed investing decisions, I think is something that would make them feel more comfortable investing in the asset class. And so one of the things we're certainly dedicated to at Grayscale is doing that. And, you know, we've developed an entire library of resources on our website in an effort to really help investors make those informed investing decisions. Things like, you know, portfolio construction, valuation, primers. Those are the types of, you know, important conversations that we like to have with the investment community, and we think can really help lead to some positive outcomes.
Very interesting. Good luck with GBTC's conversion, and congratulations on its immense success so far. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So that was Michael Sonnenschein. Joining me now is Mike Venito, Portfolio Manager of the Amplify Transformational Data Sharing ETF, ticker symbol PLOK. Mike, welcome Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Nina. I'm thrilled to be here with you at Zacks.
So I wanted to start with your thoughts on Bitcoin ETF filings. And we have at least 8 ETF filings in the US now. And GBTC has announced its plans to convert into an ETF. And today, the Senate confirmed Gary Gensler as chairman of the SEC. And in fact, many crypto investors are now hopeful that we will probably get a Bitcoin approval soon, because Gensler is a crypto expert. He has taught blockchain and digital currencies as a professor at MIT. And Canada already has approved some Bitcoin ETFs. And the first Bitcoin ETF in Canada has already gathered over $1 billion in assets. So what are your thoughts on these Bitcoin ETF filings? And do you think that we will see a Bitcoin ETF soon?
So this is a great question, because it gets to the heart of what Bitcoin is, right? When Satoshi Nakamoto, or whoever that person actually is, came up with the idea of Bitcoin, it had two properties. One, the idea that there would be a limited supply, and two, that it would be separate from a trusted third party or a sovereign. And I find a lot of irony in the fact that investors seem to want the ETF and the SEC to stand in as a trusted third party to help them gain access to the ETF itself. I mean, to the Bitcoin itself. So there is this irony there. Now, to that end, I think from the time you asked the question to me getting to answering it, I think we've had like 2 more ETFs filed. I think we're up to 9 or 10 now. I mean, it literally, everybody is trying to get in. And that's just Wall Street trying to find a way to charge fees to get access. There are some other benefits, but that's the primary one. So people want an ETF to stand in as the trusted third party. Now, when we get to the new head of the SEC, yes, he is experienced with blockchain technology. Yes, he is very intelligent and knowledgeable and wise to this. He's did a lot of work with the commodity approach to Bitcoin at the CFTC. All that said, I think we're putting way too much pressure on the idea that the decision of what our federal government decides Bitcoin is and decides how to deal with it shouldn't all rely on them saying an ETF's approved or not. To me, I think it's going to be a while. I think there are other parts of our government that are bigger and more important than whether or not we approve an ETF that needs to take a strong opinion on Bitcoin before we see one. So a very long answer to a very intelligent question, Nina, but I think we're a long way off from the SEC approving a Bitcoin ETF. At least 12 months, probably longer.
Great. So we may not get a Bitcoin ETF soon, but investors can use blockchain ETFs that provide exposure to the technology that underpins cryptocurrencies through blockchain ETFs. And your ETF, the Amplify Blockchain ETF, this is one of the best performing ETFs this year. It has gained more than 60%. So talk to us a little bit about this ETF and what it aims to do, what kind of exposure it aims to provide, and then maybe we can also discuss how holdings are selected and weighted in the portfolio.
Sure. So here at Toroso, we are the active sub-advisors and partners in the Amplify Transformational Data Sharing ETF with the ticker BLOK. That's BLOK. My team is very, very active in meeting with the managements of all of these companies involved in expanding the blockchain ecosystem that are public entities. So we break the public markets for blockchain companies into a number of segments. Probably the most interesting component right now are the cryptocurrency miners or blockchain miners. People know many of the names like Riot and Mara and Hut 8 and Hive and Argo blockchain and all of those. What's very important is understanding what their business model really is doing today versus what it's done historically and what the mines are actually producing and what the hash rates are and what their energy expenses are. And that's why we're very focused on being active. We have sent our team, my co-PM, Dan Weisskopf, has flown to Iceland and seen the mines of Hive mining away at Ethereum. We've got this great picture of him scaling a mountain and getting into a mining room. But it's really important to see what they're doing, right, and how they're doing it. Because at the current price of crypto as a whole, Bitcoin leading the way, at that price, it appears that cryptocurrency miners or blockchain miners are generating about $20 billion a year in revenue by producing and furthering the chains. That's $20 billion at current prices. To give that context, since I am an ETF nerd, the entire ETF industry, if you take all the expense ratios and add them up, is about $10 billion. So this little portion of the expansion of blockchain is generating twice the revenue of the entire ETF industry. So I don't think of us as really a proxy for Bitcoin or a proxy for cryptocurrencies. I think of us as owning the public companies that are the infrastructure and miners of the cryptocurrency.
So I'm looking at the holdings in the portfolio and I see very interesting names. MicroStrategy is the top holding currently, which totally makes sense because of their investment and their belief in Bitcoin. Then I see Galaxy Digital Holdings, Marathon Digital Holdings, PayPal and Square. They also make a lot of sense. PayPal and Square both have made investing in Bitcoin so easy. I also see GBTC, I see some tech giants, NVIDIA, Google, and Tesla too over there. Then I see some Chinese tech companies too. And of course, semiconductor companies, in addition to NVIDIA, I see Taiwan Semi and AMD. So talk to us a little bit about some of the holdings that you like and how they are enabling or advancing the blockchain technology.
Sure. So I like to think of it in segments, and my team looks at these in those segments. When we try and have a focus of never letting one segment become too large of a portion of the portfolio. The largest any segment's ever gotten was about 34%. So we already talked about the miners. That's the largest component today. That is Hut 8, Hive, Riot, Mara, CleanSpark, which is a really exciting one that's focused on using renewables to do cryptocurrency mining. The second largest component is what we call transactional or on-ramps. These are companies from traditional finance that are making access to blockchain and cryptocurrency go mainstream. So great examples of that are Silvergate, which is a regional bank in California that does a lot of the crypto banking with fiat for companies in the blockchain world. Voyager Digital, which is very similar to a Coinbase. I know we're going to cover Coinbase later, but Voyager is a exchange / quasi-custodian, but has a different business model, less transactional, more about lending and more like a Robinhood version of a Coinbase. Or we also own in that space SPACs. So there's a SPAC we own that is taking Bakkt public. Bakkt is a initiative created by the New York Stock Exchange that takes all the traditional AML and all the rules around clearing and custody and applies it to all tokens. So it's not really just a cryptocurrency play. It's anything that can be digitized. So your Hilton Honors points or your Starbucks rewards or your Amex could be transacted with and exchanged for Dogecoin or Bitcoin or stock in Apple. So that's the second largest component. Then we have things like conglomerates. That's where a Galaxy would fit. We have some of the semiconductors that you mentioned. There are also two Chinese companies that have had some controversy, and we've actually met with the management. One of our team members is a PhD mathematician from China. So she helped us communicate with Ebon and Canaan. And then when we think about MicroStrategies and GBTC, combined, we keep them at about a 10% position because we think of them as our exposure to the largest public blockchain, which is Bitcoin. And you can't have a blockchain ETF without actively participating in the largest public blockchain.
Very interesting. Now, most people associate blockchain only with Bitcoin, whereas the blockchain technology is actually a transformational technology which can have immense uses beyond the crypto world. In fact, some experts say that it has the potential to change our world. So talk to us a little bit about the investment case for blockchain ETFs versus investing in Bitcoin.
Sure. So I used to give this speech when I would travel before the COVID world. And I used to say, at the beginning of the speech, how many times is the word blockchain mentioned in the original Bitcoin paper, the Satoshi Nakamoto paper from 2009? And most people get it wrong. They assume, it's got to be 100 times or whatever. It's actually zero. The concept of blockchain existed before Bitcoin, and really came in to describing Bitcoin when it went to the message boards and Satoshi started explaining how things would get done. Now, he describes the idea of blocks, but the blockchain itself is actually a really simple idea, right? 5,000 years ago, we started transacting with each other, and we wanted a record of that, so we drew it on a cave wall. About 500 years ago, instead of transacting one-to-one, the Medicis and the banking systems all started, where instead of me verifying to you that we did a transaction, I'll let somebody else step in as a trusted third party and verify that a transaction happened. Blockchain is just the next iteration of that. Blockchain is simply a ledger. It's a process of accounting. And the first process of it is one-to-one. The second process was let a third party verify it. The third process is blockchain, where you let a computer program, a decentralized network, verify it. The power of that, the value of that is enormous. Add up the value of everybody you pay to verify your transactions, every bank, every custodian, every social media platform. Imagine if all the money that they're charging to verify our discussions, our transactions, our social, our data was taken away from them and distributed across everybody else participating in the blockchain. So when I think about a blockchain portfolio of companies, I want the ones supporting those public blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatnot. And we have plenty of that. But occasionally we will look at the private ones as well, right? The world of private blockchain business, the part that's doing the boring stuff, global logistics, oh boy, that sounds exciting, or healthcare records, or supply chain management. Oh, all of that is $50-60 billion, which is, call it 5 or 6 times the size of the ETF industry. So the boring part of blockchain is still gigantic and making the world better. We are actively going out and finding the companies that are making a difference with this and packaging them together in a thoughtful way.
Excellent. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about Coinbase too, because it's the first major Bitcoin-focused company to make its public debut, and it made its public debut today through direct listing. What are your thoughts on Coinbase listing, and will Coinbase be included in the portfolio anytime soon?
Yes, so Coinbase is in the portfolio. We did start our allocation as part of the negotiated pricing that occurred this morning, and then we continued to purchase throughout the day. We do believe it is an extremely important company, but valuation right now is very difficult, right? There's a lot of hype. There's a lot of excitement. So I would not say we are at our conviction weight in it yet in terms of the portfolio, but it is part of the Block portfolio as of the time of this recording. And it is something that we can see making a conviction investment in, which for us is around a 3 to 5% position. However, we're not going to do that just blind of price. And that's why I say we have started to look at where Coinbase fits in our portfolio. It is a very powerful day for the world of traditional finance, accepting the idea of, you know, real companies in the crypto world. For us, Coinbase would fit in that transactional or on-ramp concept. I had mentioned earlier Voyager, which is a much smaller competitor. but you know, I love that this is all occurring, but I would caution people from buying without knowledge of price. That is why we made Block an active fund. An index can't make that decision. An index just buys the name.
Excellent. Wow. It's definitely a very exciting day for crypto investors and the crypto markets. And it's so exciting to see that you already have Coinbase in the portfolio. And that also explains the power of active management in this evolving space rather than tracking an index.
Yes. I mean, we were one of the, on the day that we launched Block, another fund launched at the exact same time. We were the active one. They were the passive one. They've done better than us in what I would call the periods when the market is slow. When, you know, there was a nice little year, 18-month period where nobody really cared about blockchain, cryptocurrencies, or Bitcoin. It went nowhere. And during that period, you know, the index version, by owning a lot more of the larger cap traditional names that you mentioned that we have too, you know, smaller positions in, did much better, right? During the winters, as we like to call them. When things turned back on, we were actively able to shift away from the private blockchains, away from the more traditional bigger cap names and into the miners. And that's what has driven a lot of our strong performance. A big part of active management with ETFs is also tax management. And I think people don't quite understand how powerful that is, right? We have been able to, you know, manage these positions without generating a cap gain. That's extremely important when you have stocks as volatile as they can be when they're acting as the picks and axes for an underlying commodity like Bitcoin or Ethereum or, you know, Binance Coin or whatever. When those things move 20 and 30%, the companies that are mining them can move just as much, if not more. So being able to tax manage is extremely important within the active ETF wrapper.
Great stuff. Congratulations on the excellent performance. Thanks so much for joining us.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Nina.
Thanks for listening. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Also, make sure to subscribe so that you do not miss any episode. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please email podcast@zacks.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.